Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the book they have written, are in the process of writing, or intend to write someday. My co-host and producer is Andy Lowe, and Andy has primary responsibility for the Alpharetta studio of Business Radio X. So how goes the work and the success of this studio, Andy?
And we're hopping along. We keep putting great guests on the show, and we keep having great feedback from our listener audience. So that, coupled with a little bit of warm weather, I don't think you can beat what's going on here in Atlanta.
I like it. I'm included in that good guests and stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. So you make the job easy because you do all the legwork. I love it.
Good. As long as you keep us going out over the air, that's all we want, right? Well, today's theme is business professionals who write expressly for children and youth. And I've got to tell you that each of our guests this morning met a challenge that I placed before them. When I was contacted with a request to appear on Right Here, Right Now, or when I got their request, I replied with my usual question, especially with these gentlemen, given that the focus of the business or of this show is business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals and the book they have written and its impact on their business, how does your book that either deals with children or young adults relate to our ongoing theme? And I've got to tell you, sometimes, most of the time, when faced with that question, I never hear from people again, but not with these two gentlemen. Each provided a response that truly impressed me. Each has much to share, and I know we will be the richer for having heard their stories. And we're going to go alphabetically. We're going to start with E.G. Carter. He describes himself as living proof that no dream is impossible. He's battled with dyslexia, earned a bachelor's degree in computer science from UGA, and went on to create two companies. As much success and acclaim that Carter achieved in the business world, there was an even greater challenge that he wanted to conquer, and he describes that as his dyslexia. And he did this to inspire his sons, show them that nothing really is impossible with dedication and hard work. And the result is Carlusia. Did I say that right?
Carlusia.
Good. It's Carlusia, The Passing of the Guard, the first in the new teen fantasy and young adult series. Well, welcome, E.G.
Well, thank you, Tim. Thank you for having me on.
Let's start with the probably unanticipated. You created two companies. What were they? Did you say, I've had fun and move on, or sell them, or walk away, or what?
Well, I've always had an entrepreneur spirit, so even in college, some buddies and I started a business selling computers back to the University of Georgia, where we're going to school.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always kind of a computer theme. I have a computer science degree, and we were all in the same school together. So we started selling computer equipment in Athens, and we actually opened Custom Computing. I believe that was the name of it. It's been so long ago, I have to dust off some rust in my memory. But it was fun, and I've started several others as I went along in the late 80s and early 90s. And then I joined another company. I didn't start this company, but I was sort of a co-founder to kick it off even further in 1990. And we started with just borrowed equipment and borrowed rent, borrowed mm-hmm. office space, a phone line literally hooked into someone else's phone stretched over
oh
the tile.
Oh, my goodness.
And from not much revenue in 1990 to in the year 2000, I think we finished up around $16 million. We were on the Inc. 500 in 1996.
Oh, darn. That's impressive. Well, how did your dyslexia affect you in your work in those areas?
So being a dyslexic, I kind of gravitated towards science. Mm-hmm. I'm very math-minded. I think I took 7 different types of calculus classes in college to get my computer science degree.
Oh, my.
And so I just drifted toward the science side of school mm-hmm. and away from the difficult side that I was having trouble with. I got a football scholarship to play football, and
oh
I started at a junior college called Lees McRae in North Carolina, and when I got there, I was really put under the wing of a woman named Dr. Smith, who diagnosed me at that time with dyslexia. I always knew I had a problem. I always tell people I couldn't spell cat. And when she got a hold of me, she was very kind in uh-huh. saying, you're not stupid, you're not broken, you just have to learn different. There's a reason why you're the way you are, but no one really cares. The end result is you just have to learn different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so that helped me out a lot. She really shepherded me through my first college years under her wing and helped me learn.
That makes a big difference when you have somebody standing with you, doesn't it?
It does. And with my age, it was hard for my parents to ever diagnose what was going on. They knew I had an issue. My mother did everything she could to try to get me all the teaching and find a way to learn. When I told her I was going to write a book and be on the road with this, I kind of had to okay that with her. She wasn't really happy. She didn't want people to think that she failed and didn't know what was going on. But at that time, they really didn't have a lot of way to diagnose you what dyslexia was.
Exactly. Just looking at you and knowing who we have as a friend in common and knowing that I'm older than that friend, I'm older than you, so I know what you're talking about. I think back to some of my classmates who struggled, and we wouldn't know what it was.
Right.
And I've seen adults these days, and you would be one of them, that, man, you get that diagnosis, and that's what it is.
Right.
Now we can figure out what to do.
Well, you know, kids go through life, too, and I felt it. You think you're stupid because you're not doing the things that normal people are or that mainstream people are. And I want kids to know, that was part of the reason I wrote this book, is I wanted kids to know that you may have a problem, but you're not stupid. A lot of dyslexics are very high in IQ, and they're very intelligent, and they're very entrepreneurial, and they try to find their own way because they have to.
And as you said, you took like 7 calculus courses. I took 1. That was my science course for my distribution for my Bachelor of Arts degree. Calculus and trigonometry. My younger son had that in 10th grade.
I know.
Oh, my, my, my. Well, what prompted you then to even think about writing a book?
Well, it's funny. I think my wife and I, we never take the easy path.
Uh-huh.
So one day I was thinking about writing a book, and I've always loved movies. I've always been very creative when it comes to telling stories. I'm in sales, and you have to be creative in order to sell some types of products.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been a good storyteller. So I just one day I came home and I looked at Liz and I said, I think I'm going to write a book. And she knew I had dyslexia, and she said, well, do you realize how difficult that's going to be? And I said, sure, I know it is. And she said, then let's do it. You know, let's find a way. And I said, well, it's going to be hard for you, too. She said, no problem. You and I can do it together.
You've got a wonderful wife.
I do.
Seriously, to do that rather than saying, are you kidding, to say, let's do it.
Right. And so the boys didn't know that I had this affliction. I hid it very well because I was very successful in business.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell people, having dyslexia and writing a book is sort of like joining the swim team with cinder blocks around your ankles and expecting to keep up with everybody.
That's an I like that image. I like that image. For those who may not fully understand dyslexia, can you give us a short explanation?
Sure. I'm not an expert on it. I can only kind of tell you what goes on with me. But I know from talking to people, you do sometimes get words backwards.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite jokes is I didn't know that God was not a dog until I was 21. Get it? Dog.
I understand that one. I kind of knew where you were going there.
So I can say that joke because I'm making fun of myself. But some people get things backwards. Sometimes it's just a disconnect between your head and your hands, maybe trying to type something.
Mm-hmm.
You really are. I'm writing, and I know that I've written a sentence a certain way, and then sometimes I reread it and go, yeah, that didn't come out at all like I wanted it to. Sometimes letters are backwards, like the I before E, E before I. And a lot of times numbers are backwards. Telephone numbers are, I learned a long time ago, if somebody gave me a telephone number and I got it wrong, I'll look at the telephone number and say, well, I just got those two reversed, and I'll dial the telephone number and it's the right one.
So you pick it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so
great.
I just kind of stumble along. There's degrees to it. I mean, there's people have dyslexia that it's not that bad. And then there's people that are really crippled with it. And sometimes when they get nervous, they can't articulate. Or in a public speaking environment, it's hard for your brain to let your mouth work because you're afraid you're going to make a mistake.
Uh-huh.
I think one of the biggest things I had when I was a kid that I can remember that really just struck me as fear is reading out loud.
Oh.
Because I had to read, and then I had to articulate to the class what mm-hmm. I was reading. So typically, I can't remember anything I read out loud. Once I read it out loud, I'm so focused on not making a mistake or reading the book, I don't remember what I read.
Mm, okay. Yeah, what comes to my mind with the description you just gave is I have clients. I have more clients than I want to think about in terms of they have a disconnect between their head and their fingertips. Has to be, and I'm not sure it's dyslexia.
Yeah.
But what happens is I'll read their work, and they will tell me that they have poured their heart and soul. Blood is all over. I can't find it. And what happens, and so I bet you don't do this because you're so intentional, but what happens is people see in their mind what they want to write, but it doesn't get down to their fingers on the paper, and I have to have them go back and put that in.
Right. So I wrote my book as an adventure story, sort of like an adventure game, and mm-hmm. I tried to write it like a movie because it's actually going on in my head, and the characters are moving around in my head, and so I try to bring that from my head right to the paper.
Oh, that's powerful.
So that's the way I try to focus. And I've got some advice for any dyslexics out there that want to write a book. You need to be prepared to open your shirt and shed any kind of armor that you have because it's going to be brutal. I think Liz and I counted the other day that we've edited and probably completely rewritten or wrote my book 17 times to make sure that
good.
There's no mistakes.
That's good. You know, to me, that says you understand not only the challenge you face, but you also understand what it takes to get a good book. Again, if I can reference some of my clients, they write their manuscript, send it to me, and are aghast when I send it back and say, you need to fix this. You know, but I wrote it. Yes, you did.
Yeah.
You know, real professional, well-known authors know that the first draft is a first draft.
Well, that's true. And so I tried to write the book also to inspire kids. So that was the other reason I wanted to write it. My sons were going through a time in their life where they didn't know what they wanted to do. My youngest son now is 16 and my oldest is 19. And this was 4 or 5 years ago. And I wanted to put an impression on them that they could do anything they want in their life. And then as I wrote the book and I realized that it was actually going to be good, I wanted to try to do something with it. So mm-hmm. I want to try to give a motivational speech at schools or middle schools or try to help kids that maybe people have told you can't follow your dreams because you can't run fast enough or you're not tall enough or you're not smart enough or you're not capable of trying to do what you want. Well, maybe there's an avenue that you could be a part of your dream. You don't have to be Michael Jordan to play basketball. You could be a part of the basketball program and still follow your dream. Don't let people tell you you can't do what you set your mind to do. I'm proof you can. If it's the most difficult thing in the world a dyslexic could do is write a book.
Absolutely.
So if absolutely. I can do it, you can do anything that you set your mind to if you get serious about it and you work on it and you're hard planning and you don't give up.
Mm-hmm. I like that image. I'll tell you another thing that drew me to want to have you on the show is you won me when you said you did it for your sons, because I have two sons. And my second book is Letters to My Sons, A Father's Faith Journey. And that came about because my boys would say to me, Dad, our friends can't believe that you're a minister, because that's what I was way back when. Of course, I thought it was their behavior in school, and they assured me it wasn't. But it had to do with how they articulated faith in this part of the world, this part of the country. And so writing that book for them, and they were 16 and 20 at the time, close to your sons, and so they were in college when I finished up, and now they're my best salespeople. Oh, you got a question on that? Buy my dad's book. Read it. So talk to us about Carlusia. Give us enough that we want to run out and get that book.
Give you the elevator pitch, right?
Yes, that's it.
So Carlusia is about a young boy who's 10 years old. His name is Eddie Casket, and he moves into a neighborhood. And you know the challenges that a kid has moving into a new neighborhood, a new house, a pool. He's got all these neighbors he's meeting. Well, at the same time, on his grandfather's deathbed, he finds out that all these wild stories his grandfather had been telling him about another world are true, and that he's left something in his barn called the Sapphire of Link, which is a bracelet that will open portals in Eddie's neighborhood. And so he's told at his last breath that you're part of a long line of guardians, and you have to go help them now. And he's confused. He's a 10-year-old boy, and his dad's been telling him that these stories are just crazy from an old man. And so when he finds the bracelet, it actually opens up a portal in his neighborhood. There's several. And so there's a dynamics of a 10-year-old trying to figure out, should I really go? What's going on? And I wanted to write this book in sort of now time frame so that you have iPods and iPhones and things like that. And you're in the kids are going through situations that kids are going through now, not a futuristic book or in the past. And so when Eddie goes through the portal, he finds out that when he arrives in Carlucci, the first thing he finds out is he turns 16. So there's a dynamics of a 10-year-old turning 16, and if you're 20 or 30 or 40 years old and you go back to Carlucci, you turn 16. So he gets to see his grandfather and all the guardians before him, his grandfather's grandfather and so on, the picture of them as they are when they're 16 years old.
I get all kinds of images. The first one with what you just said is hormones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's got to be raging when you put 16-year-olds together.
But you're in an illegal world if everybody's 16. So
that's true.
That creates a whole other problem.
Well, yeah. His next-door neighbor is a boy named Dan, and then the neighbor down from that's a boy named Scotty. And the three of them end up in Carlucci together. Dan and Scotty get there by accident. They're not supposed to go, but then when they get there, Scotty wants to stay. Of course, he wants to be part of the team. And Dan is sort of an inventor, maybe my internal science geek, and he's scared to death. He never signed up for this. He doesn't want to go back, and they have to talk him into going back. So there's a dynamics of friends going back and forth. And when Scotty gets there, he actually has a mustache and sideburns. So he's got this very big ego of, oh my gosh, guys, look at this. I'm buff. I got muscles.
I like that. Well, other images that come to mind is, you know, you've got the portal to get on the train to Hogwarts.
Yeah.
And you've got the closet in the Chronicles of Narnia. But for big people, too, you know, shamans in many of the third world countries, say, shamanistic practices say, the world is full of portals. We can find them.
Right.
If we're attuned to them. So I'm thinking this, your book, you may have written for kids, but I'll bet you there are going to be some adults that are going turning those pages.
There are, actually. I think my oldest reader is 67 years old. She bought the book and read it. And I think my youngest one right now is 10. So the dynamics of where my book falls into is about 10 to 18, but I think there are adults that read it because they could fantasize the fact that they would turn 16 when they go back to Carlucia. Yeah. And there's a lot of characters that Eddie meets. One of my favorite characters in the book is a little two-foot, for lack of a better words, rat. He's a little fuzzy monster called Wahaha, and he has sharp teeth and a big blue tongue, and he's very sarcastic, and he's invisible when he's in Drayton Woods with Eddie. So he's trying to help Eddie find the bracelet by swirling around his head, creating wind. So Eddie's following the wind, and he's following signs that his grandfather's left for him. And then when he gets through the portal the first time, he actually sees Waha for the first time. And Waha wants to give him a hug. He wants to express, you know, we worked so hard to get here, and Eddie thinks a rat's attacking him. So they start a fight right there in the middle of one of the other characters, and his name's Torgy's library. And so that's how he meets the first two people in Carlucci. He's fighting with one of them, and then Torgy walks in and goes, who are you? You know, because he expects his grandfather to be there.
That's so amazing. I'm sitting in awe of all these images. and I need to say to people, I did not pay E.G. to say so much of what he's saying, but I could hug him if I could. Because you said you wrote for the 16 to 18. That's kind of your target market.
10 to 18.
Or 10 to 18, yeah. I'm sorry. But you've also told us the wide range of people that are reading it. And that's a critical piece that I try to get across to people who want to write a book. They want so often to write for everybody. And if you write for everybody, you write for no one.
Right.
You have to pick who's the target market and then hope that other people will pick it up and read it, and they will do that.
Well, there's a couple of authors out there that I've read a lot of, and that's how I started. So I tried to read everything in the genre I could, and I tried to find a style that I liked. mm-hmm. and try to get gravitate toward that. So the Alex Rider series, I don't know if you're familiar with that, Anthony Horowitz. He writes about, and it's a setting in the UK, he writes about a 14-year-old boy who is a spy in MI6. So he has to deal with things like that. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of an adult situation with a kid having to deal with it. So I like that. And Vince Flynn is an adult thriller writer, and he has dyslexia.
Ah.
And so I've read all of his books trying to, you know, just when you feel like you have a kindred spirit out there, I wanted to read his books and see how he wrote so that I could make sure that the structure in my book was going to come across to some adults also with children. I tried to write at a higher level so that I wouldn't really kind of write down to the level of the mm-hmm. children. I didn't want to insult them. So I wrote my book more at an adult level, but children can read it.
Okay. How many books do you envision in the series?
4.
You got a lot of work ahead of you.
Yeah, I'm about 100 pages into the second one, and it's called The Dark Deception. So it's going to be a continuation of the Carlucia series, and I'm having a great time. I really am. I think it's fitting for me to write books because in my mind, I'm creating a movie. I love movies, and so I write these characters as I see them in my mind, and I tell Liz and the boys and whoever really asked me that I actually go to Carlucia, right? I'm actually there creating uh-huh. this story on the paper. I'm living, going through the portal and being in Carlucia as I write.
So what advice would you give to other people who are thinking about writing?
Read every book you can find in the genre that you want to write in. And good. Then narrow that down to someone that you like the way they write. If it's third-person narrative, if it's first person, whatever. The Hunger Games, you know, that's mm-hmm. a great story out. Now, it's written in first person, so I can't read that because I write in a different different way. I'm writing in third person narrative. So I want to read those books, but I'm going to have to wait until after I finish my books. But I would find the genre that you want to write in, I would find gravitate to an author. I like Clive Cussler, too, because of the way he describes his characters and the way that he has sentence structure. Now, be careful never to plagiarize anything or copy any of the other authors, but you can see their sentence structures. You can see where they use a comma or how they describe their character or how they build a character from one chapter to another. A lot of people say that they write the last part of the book first. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. So I have a computer science degree, and I've always taught top-down thinking, right?
You're straight down.
So I'm first in, last out. So I have to go start with the beginning of the book and then go right to chapter 1, 2, 3. And so my chapters break up pretty well. They're not necessarily a certain page length, so I let them naturally break up wherever there's a break in the story.
So people want to be in touch with you, buy your book, get to see you face to face. What's your contact information? Now's your 30 seconds of plug time.
So you can get it at www.carlucia.com, and that's Carlucia. You can Google Carlucia, and I made that word up, so I don't think anybody else is using it. It all pops up with E.G. Carter all over it. And you can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it at Amazon. It's on the Kindle. It's on the Nook. Soon to be on the iPad. I have my first book signing that's really at a bookstore instead of just being a local area with kids. I have a book signing on Friday from 4 to 6 at Hall Exchange in Gainesville. And I'm very excited about a Barnes & Noble bookstore signing on Saturday from 12 until 5. So it's the 31st at Barnes & Noble in the Forum in Norcross. So that's going to be very exciting for me, and I hope some kids can come out.
For those who listen to this show on the MP3, we're talking the state of Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking Friday, March 30th, and Saturday, March 31st.
Right, and the 31st is from noon to 5, and Friday is from 4 to 6.
Great.
E.G., I got one question before we switch guests here. Just out of curiosity, because I hear you talking about writing this book, and it's very hands-on. I mean, you're talking about sentence structure and commas and periods and punctuation and all this stuff. Why was it important for you to actually write this book yourself versus, I'm just kind of thinking, if I were struggling with something like dyslexia, but you mentioned you're a great storyteller, my inclination would have been to just narrate the tale to someone and have them write it. Why was it important for you to write it?
I guess it goes back to showing the boys that they can do anything they set their mind on, right? I didn't want them to think you could shortcut something just because you have an affliction. So if you're not as fast or you're not as strong, then you need to work harder. If you have the ability and you have the focus and you set your mind to something you can do, I wouldn't want someone else writing it. I think if I dictated my book to someone, I would probably be in a struggle with them on how it's going to be on paper because of my dyslexia. I would think it would be a certain way, and they may put it down a different way than I would. And I think at the end of the day, if I looked at it, I would think, yeah, somebody else wrote that. So great. I wanted to write it myself.
Oh, great.
I like that answer.
Well, Ben, you've been very patient. Ben Halpert is the Director of Information Technology, Risk Management, and Compliance for a Fortune 500 firm. And Ben is leading a mission to keep all kids, including his own, safe online. And to that end, Ben has written The Savvy Cyber Kids at Home, The Family Gets a Computer. And The Savvy Cyber Kids, that's a tongue twister, isn't it? Or a lip twister.
Just a bit.
Yeah, The Savvy Cyber Kids at Home, The Defeat of the Cyber Bully. Ben also created a nonprofit, Savvy Cyber Kids Incorporated, to promote the awareness and importance of online safety for children. You have written for children, and your day job is?
For adults.
Yeah, so, it's really a technical job, isn't it?
It is, right. So I focus in my day job on ensuring that information assets for large corporations and smaller organizations are protected and manage the risk around that and what those organizations need to do. And that kind of led me into the children's book because I spend all day in the information security, information privacy, risk management world. And then I take that and you know, what got me into the book was saying, so this is what I know and this is what I do for a job. And the only other people that would actually understand what I do something similar to me. And we're a small group of individuals with that specialty. So I started thinking about, okay, what can I do to help all the people, all of my friends that have young children navigate what their children are going to be doing on the internet and how they can actually approach those topics and teach them what they need to teach them without having that specific background.
I'll tell you, I am really impressed. Ben brought a copy of two of his books. Well, you've only written two so far.
I've written two, and there's two more in the works.
That's what four seems to be the magic number with you guys this morning, right? And you both have an IT background. But what really intrigues me about your books, Ben, and I think I shared this with you maybe last week at the book signing. If not, it was an author. But I will never write a book for children. It's the toughest, for me, it's the toughest writing to do because you have to tell a whole story, limited vocabulary.
That's right, yeah.
How'd you get yourself around that?
So, like E.G. was saying, you know, he read every book in the genre, and well, I went to the bookstore and I sat in the children's section and I just started reading every book that was there that looked interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have three young children and I started reading all of their books, and I kind of found the writing style that I thought would be appropriate to actually teach without actually teaching, right? So a parent can sit down and read the book as they're snuggling with their young children, 3, 4, 5 year old at night, and read the book. And, you know, the parent is teaching the child what they should do. And the parents is actually, don't tell the parents this, but they're actually learning what they, you know, should be teaching their children as well.
You know, one of the resource books that I have in my office is appropriate vocabulary for the appropriate age level. And whenever I get a manuscript submitted to me saying this is for children, I go to that book right away, and it isn't very long before I have this manuscript that's covered with red marks saying wrong age. How did you told us you read all these books. Were you able to then just kind of put yourself in a mindset and just think at that level to write what you wrote?
Yes, I was able to do that, and by thinking about, okay, so if I'm one of my children, how would I look at that rectangle sitting on top of a desk? What is that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a computer monitor, if we're using, you know, legacy computer technology, right?
Sure.
What is that little small black rectangle? Well, that's a phone, you know, but when I was growing up, a phone actually had a dial. You had to move your finger around and
You too, huh?
Yeah. And so, you know, and then the cell phones went to push buttons with numbers on them. But, you know, now a phone to a child, when they say, what does a phone look like? It's a black rectangle. And it lights up when you touch it.
And it fits in your pocket or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, and you can read books and you can play games and you can go to websites and you can download apps and you can throw birds at things. You know, it's that's a phone.
How have your children reacted to your book?
Oh, my children love it, and they're very proud of me for knowing that that I'm. But I had to express they love the pictures, and I was lucky enough to find a really fantastic illustrator named Taylor Sutherland, and he really brings out, you know, the words that I write. He brings out in the images that are really friendly for young children.
That was something I was about to say to you. Your book's laying here, and in the illustrator really is good. It's got a great cover to it. It's good, great art.
He's really fantastic, and I don't give him direction. I give him the manuscript, what I wrote. So I take all the time I need to write it, and when I'm happy with the, you know, what I'm trying to get across, mm-hmm. I hand it to him and say, "This is your specialty.
Wow,
let's see what you can do." And I give him, you know, every once in a while there'll be a page. I'll ask for a tweak or something, but he's really, really good at taking the words and converting
it
into
pictures.
That's
confidence for sure. So, how did the foundation come about?
So I started the nonprofit Savvy Cyber Kids because when I initially wrote the, I'll call it the roughed first draft that I sent out, which was really like the 20th draft that I did, right? Mm-hmm. But the one that I actually sent out, I sent the manuscript to every single publisher that would accept unsolicited manuscripts and mm-hmm. the ones that you didn't need an agent for.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent them to them, and I got a rejection letter from every single one of them. A couple of them came back with a little, you know, additional than the standard verbiage on it. And one was, "This is a great concept, but we won't make any money off of it." And to me, I'm not doing this for money. So I had to figure out a way. I know that there is a need in the marketplace
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we're giving our 3-year-old children, our 2-year-old children, an iPhone to keep them quiet at a dinner table or to keep them, you know, occupied while they're sitting in the waiting room of a doctor's office. But what are you doing at that point? You're actually creating this sense of comfort with children that they grow up loving technology, but only know one aspect of it, right? So how do we teach them everything we need to teach them in a nice, friendly way when we're first giving them those technologies?
And mom and dad are handing that item to the child.
That's right.
So it must be okay.
Exactly.
They aren't saying, "Take this, but."
Right. No, they're not. They just give it. And the kid figures out how to get on and log on, and they figure out the parent's password or the, you know, how to get into an Android phone with the pattern.
What was, I asked EG this, what was the challenge for you in writing your books?
The biggest challenge that I had in writing the books themselves was being able to, I had all these concepts that I wanted to talk about, all these mm-hmm. Different areas I wanted to cover. How do you cover them in a way that a 3, 4, 5-year-old can actually digest?
There you go.
So breaking it down, and actually I envision many, many more books than 4 because of that,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you're writing a book for adults, it's a large chapter book. You cover many topics.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about an attention span of a 3-year-old, you know, how do you write to mm-hmm. teach a 3-year-old? So it's to break it up.
But that's still what you've shared is applicable to people writing for adults. Folks will start listing out the chapters, and then there just comes a point in which you have to say, maybe not, because if I write all of this, nobody's going to buy it.
Right.
I may have 2 books here. So that's a universal issue, just at a different kind of level. How did you determine, you came out first with The Family Gets a Computer. That kind of makes sense because that's the start of it all.
Right.
What were the concepts that you wanted to put in there and are in there, in fact?
So in the first book, The Savvy Cyber Kids at Home, The Family Gets a Computer, I wanted to introduce the concept of what a computer is,
mm-hmm.
what a computing device is. And it was also a challenge for me saying, do I introduce what a phone is? Do I introduce what a computer is, what a desktop is, what a laptop is, what a, you know,
a
multimedia machine? So how do you, what's the universal concept?
Mm-hmm.
So the illustrator actually came up with a round laptop. So it doesn't really fit into any, you know, particular section of technology. So
that's great.
So the concept is twofold. One, teach the kids what computers are, what you can do with them,
mm-hmm.
and then teach them the concept of privacy. So, like, we teach our kids about stranger danger in the real world, right? The first time we take them to a park, we say, don't talk to any strangers. You know, if you can't see me, come find me right away or make sure I can always see you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what we don't do is when we hand the child that phone or give them a laptop or a tablet, we don't tell them what they need to watch out for. We just assume everything's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case. So in the first book, they get the computer, they understand what it's for, and then they turn into superhero characters when they go on the computer and when they go online with these devices.
Oh,
so
wow.
That's the identity they have. So if someone ever says, where do you live? What's your age? What's your sex? What sports are you into? You know, you answer with your superhero identity. So it's kind of like you and I creating IDs on websites to create accounts.
Uh-huh.
You know, so we don't want our kids saying, you know, their real name with really where they live and telling mm-hmm. other people, you know, how mm-hmm. you can come, you mm-hmm. know.
Well, that's sharp. I like that.
Thank you.
I like that. What has been the reaction of other parents who have seen the books?
Everyone that has seen it loves it. So all parents see it, love it. Once they read it, they say, wow, this is really a need that I didn't even know I needed until I read the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, you know, parents, they're busy. They're working their job. They're trying to raise their kids. They're preparing dinner. They're trying to get everyone on their schedules and doing what they need to do
mm-hmm.
and not necessarily think about the implications of everything that they're doing in life.
And meanwhile, go play on the computer. Keep yourself occupied while I do all this stuff, right?
Exactly, right. The electronic babysitter does not work.
Well, the challenge here, too, is that parents haven't been through this.
That's right.
I mean, most of us came into computers in our adult lives.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know what it's like to be a child with that type of electronic device. It didn't exist. So
that's right,
it's unknown territory. How do you teach a child to go through something that you've never been through yourself?
Right. And so we all here know life without Google. We know life without Facebook. We know life without apps. The children that are born today, they assume that all of this has been around forever.
Well, we can go further. Two of us in this room remember when TV was just black and white, right? Not color.
Right?
Not me.
So they're inviting us to take age joke shots at them now, right? I mean,
I'm going
to
hold back.
I'm
staying quiet on that
I'm
one.
Stay
I don't want to get
too much. They are inviting us. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking.
I think I've always had a color television.
Yeah, EG and I are the ones. Well, I want to get EG in on this conversation. But first, Ben, contact information. People want to buy your book, learn more about your foundation, just get to know you. What do they do?
So we are on the web at savvycyberkids.org. It's savvy with two V's, S-A-V-V-Y, cyberkids.org. I can be reached through there. Email address is info@savvycyberkids.org. I'm always willing to visit schools, do presentations for children, for faculty, for staff, for parents, to help them learn what they should do to educate their children online today and with them growing up online. And the books are available everywhere. They're available. Savvy Cyber Kids, the nonprofit, actually publishes and distributes the book. So if you're in a school environment, Baker and Taylor and Follett for libraries, you can purchase through them. If you're a parent, you can buy them at Amazon. You can buy them at barnesandnoble.com. They're available in ebook editions for Kindle, for Nook. And they're on Google as well, Google Play.
That's great. I think of a whole lot of connections between the two of you, but then I'm the host. Do you have do you have questions for each other?
I was going to ask you on your ebooks, are all your illustrations and everything coming across too? So on the tablet, the kids could read it and see it just like it is.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
cool.
So the ebooks are exactly the same, and so if you have a black and white Kindle, all the illustrations are there. They're just in gradient,
mm-hmm.
As an example, or a Nook, right? If you have a the black and white Nook, and if it's in color, everything is in color. So it's exactly the same, but it's just, you know, for kids, they really, you know, I think it's very important for them to touch the book, to turn the page. You know, if we give every kid when they, you know, when they're born, an iPhone and an ebook reader, they lose some of the, you know, the tactile learning that goes along with the process. So, yeah, it's available everywhere, and it does look the same.
The images of these two guys, I wish you all could see. It's just fun watching their face lights up. You light up. You really are enjoying your writing collectively, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Yeah, it's a great outlet.
You create personalities.
Yeah. And in the second book, The Defeat of the Cyber Bully, the kids are actually playing an online game. So there's the connection to the portal. They're playing an online, it's a continuation of the first book. The kids are playing an online game in the virtual world, and they encounter a cyberbully. And so the rest of the book is about how do you deal with the cyberbully online, and then how do you actually deal with bullies in real life? And it teaches, again, 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds how to deal with that type of character.
Well, online gaming is a very interesting community, especially when you talk about kids, because oftentimes kids are drawn into the online games, which is really an adult market. Mm-hmm. There are more guys our age that are online gaming.
And they're there trying to pick up the kids.
Well, they're that. And not only that, you have those type of guys, but
right.
But just the nature of the beast.
Right.
These guys are competitive, and they're there to win and bully, as
right.
it were.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're... A lot of them are fat and weak and wimpy in real life. I mean,
right.
I don't mind stereotyping because I've right. hung out with some of these
and
guys.
And their avatars are complete opposite.
And their avatars are complete opposite. Most of the guys play female avatars, and they're bullies. They are. They want to, you know, smack talk and push people around. And
right.
if it's a game that allows, you know, character-to-character combat or PvP, then, you know.
And discussion, right?
So and discussion, can, exactly. Yeah. So you can taunt and bully.
Real-time chat and real-time discussion right. with your microphone.
Yeah, that's a lot for a kid to take on.
It is, right. And the parents don't understand that actually happens in the games.
Right. They just think right. it's a game, you know. I mean, whoever got bullied, you know, playing Monopoly.
Exactly.
Well.
Yeah. Are your books carried at Oi Toys?
Yes, they are. They're carried at Oi Toys.
We've got to put that plug in for Ruthie Levy.
Yes,
who is
we do.
Our common friend.
She provided the introduction for me to you and what you do.
I need to talk to her on your behalf too, E.G. I think your book would be good there as well.
I'd appreciate that.
Oi Toys and Thou Shalt Read.
That's right.
She's just and Ruthie and I have a lot of fun just being together. She sends her books that she's writing to me to look at, and I'm her Christian clergy or something like that, and it's just a delight. Well, you know, it's happened one more time. The clock is on us. We always welcome your comments and suggestions about the content and about our guests on this show. And if you'd like to recommend a guest or to be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let me know. Send me an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Andy, for co-hosting, keeping me on track, keeping the mics going.
It's a hard job, but somebody's got to do it.
I know, and that's
you
why
did
you're
a great job, man.
That's why you're drenched with sweat every time we finish. And thank you to our guests, E.G. Carter and Ben Halpert. E.G., your contact information one more time
is www.carlousia.com, CARLOUSIA.
And Ben, your contact information,
SavvyCyberKids.org.
Okay. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. You can learn more about Right Choice Services at www.right, that's spelled W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Send them an email. Invite them to listen live or to the downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern Time at righterightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.